Okay, the Mary Griffith Show rolls on, and we have experts here from Cornerstone. We'll introduce Drew Quintero. Good morning, Drew. How are you?
I'm great, Mary. How are you doing today?
I'm superty duperty beyond compare.
Great.
Maybe later in the show you'll talk about some fundraiser or something.
I will.
Okay. Well, we'll turn off your microphone and you just sit and relax.
Okay. Bye.
And look pretty until then. Stephen Spears, you just sit there, relax, and look pretty and answer all my questions, okay?
That's all I'm trained to do.
Get that microphone right up to your... See, right. I'm short. Yeah, you got to pull it up because that's where I was seated.
I don't do pull-ups anymore.
You don't do pull-ups
that's all
anymore.
Over now.
Stephen, introduce yourselves to our audience. You've worked for Cornerstone for a while. What is it you do at Cornerstone?
I work with families. I work with kiddos. I work with just about anybody in need. I go out and visit the school and work with kiddos in school. So I do a wide variety of different things.
There's a lot of what we call social-emotional issues in the public schools anymore. And we used to have a school counselor, and I always thought the school counselor was kind of to tell you what classes to take and help you get into college. But more and more, the school counselor is helping you deal with problems at home. Is that the same school counselor? Is that still what you call a school counselor? Because I always thought of our school counselor when I was in high school as like an academic advisor saying, oh, little Mary, you have to take advanced physics because you're smart enough and you want to get into a good school. I don't remember the counselor ever saying, is everything okay at home?
No, I don't remember that either. When I was in, well, that's been a long time ago, but our school counselor was the same way. You know, hey, you need to take math, you need to do this, prepare for college, and so on and so forth. But today's school counselor, like much like me, I go in as a school-based counselor. We work on those behavioral issues. We work on emotional issues. It's mental health-driven. It's not educational-driven.
And so it's to keep them in the classroom, to keep them in the academic learning facility, because sometimes their emotional and mental health issues cause them to act out so much that they can't be in the classroom. They have to have some remedial help. Just like some kids need help in math or reading, these kids need help in coping, I guess you'd say.
Yeah, in many ways, the world's really changed since I was a kiddo. We never had any services like that.
Yeah, but did we need them or were we oblivious?
Well, I think it's both. I think it's at that point in history, we just didn't really need it. And the kids that did, we just turned a blind eye to. We were just like, let's just shut up and do your thing, or you know, get off with it. But
I'm
now,
here to teach you math, not to worry about whether
I don't want to worry about
your
what's
mom's
going
an
on.
Alcoholic. Or
exactly,
whatever,
they didn't care about that. Well, mental health wasn't even a thing back then when I was a kid. But now we care about those things. We want our kids to be good. We want them to be the best they can be. And when you have issues in school, they usually manifest from home. They manifest from life. So we're there to go in and help those kiddos manage that. And not just the kiddos, the families, too, to help them manage.
Well, last month, your counterpart was on, and she deals mostly with teenagers. And she was talking about eating disorders and coping and anxiety disorders, and she'd seen an increase in those since COVID. Quincy's been very fortunate because we've been in school pretty much throughout COVID. I think we've lost 6 weeks total when it first hit, but our second year of COVID, we were able to pretty much go to school. Most kids were able to go to school. That has made a huge difference in a lot of ways. But let's talk about what are some of the problems you're seeing. And let's talk about when I think of a 3 or 4 year old, it's hard for a lot of people to wrap their head around the fact that that might be a mental illness. I mean, I can understand a 3 year old falling out of a tree and breaking their arm, or a 3 year old with chicken pox. But most mental illness can happen in very early ages of children, and that may not be something on anybody's radar screen.
Yeah, it's often overlooked because we look at those like the terrible twos. We look at those behaviors like, oh, that's just developmental. You're just growing up. But there can be some problems there. I mean, there can be attachment issues where mom or the primary caregiver did not attach to the kiddo. There can be stuff that happened during gestation that creates problems later in infancy and so on and so forth. So you can kind of get a picture. There's some things going on there. And then
that attachment disorder, we've talked a lot about that. Chaddock has a specialty. Chaddock School here in Quincy has a whole specialty dealing with children with attachment disorder. That is something that once that happens, it takes a lot of therapy to undo the damage that attachment disorder has done, right?
It can. Every case is always different.
Right.
But, yeah, it can take a long time, and that's why it's important for those relationships to be developed with their caregiver, because we can do that work. We can do that repair process within the relationship of their caregiver. That's why, for me, it's very important to have parents involved in therapy as much as we can. There are times when, you know, it's not always ideal, but I usually like to work with the parents as much as I do with the kiddos, because if you have an attachment issue, that attachment issue is repaired through that relationship. We need that relationship with the parent to help them understand that process, give them tools and awareness of how this stuff kind of works. And that goes so much further than just like me working alone with a kiddo in a room.
Well, you can't get the child to reattach if there's nothing to attach to.
Exactly.
So the parents have to be willing to be that partner. There's also, you know, every child will say no when you grab their pink crayon. That's not a sign of mental illness. That's just a kid, right? So a lot of times, is it difficult sometimes? What would you say would be like maybe a precursor or a warning sign of a start of a mental illness, as opposed to just being a little brat who doesn't want to share her marker, for example, with a baby brother or something?
Well, that's the thing you have to look at. What's age appropriate? What do we consider normal for that age, right? So you have to kind of look at that picture. I mean, kids explore. They test their boundaries. They explore their environment. They want to develop their identity. They want to try on identities to see who they are. And that's a normal part of the psychosocial development, right? But when is it not a part of that process? What's going on? Being over-defiant. You know, just overly defiant can be a sign of, hey, maybe we need to check in on this. Self-isolation, you know, like pulling away from people, that can be an indicator. Now, some people get depressed, and then there's depression. So you have to make that determination. What is depression? What's being depressed? But you kind of look for those signs. I mean, what are their behaviors towards other people? Are their social interactions with other people always violent? Are they always negative? Is there always some sort of conflict? So you just want to kind of look at those things and then weigh in on them, see what's... Is this just an issue, or is this a mental health issue?
It's very difficult. I don't know how the average parent, because, like, for example, in my own family, my extended family, we have one little girl. She's so quiet. I mean, she will really not speak to you unless she's very, very familiar with you. She's incredibly shy. Now, that doesn't mean she'll sit in a room with you. She'll eat at a table with you, but she will probably not vocalize. As long as they're doing okay in school and they're communicating with mom and dad and with their siblings, I guess not having a big social group, they'll grow out of that probably. But at what age do you say, okay, a 7-year-old is isolating like that when they're 14? I mean, when does the red flag go up, I guess? Because every child does something weird.
We've all done something weird.
I mean, I sucked my thumb until I was incredibly old. I mean, you know, I used to go in the bathroom because I knew it was not appropriate and sit in the bathroom. Just like some people sneak in the bathroom to have a cigarette, I would say I have to go potty, and I'd sit in there and suck my thumb for 5 minutes because, you know, math was overwhelming or something. So, I mean, I admit I had a coping mechanism that was, I knew was wrong. I came to the age where I knew that sucking my thumb was wrong, but I couldn't think of something else to do instead of that. So I kept up with that for a while.
And it worked for you.
And it worked for me.
Right.
Yeah. Good. We'll go in the bathroom, suck your thumb for 5 minutes, come back out. I'm sure the teacher was like, does Mary have a urinary tract infection? No, she's emotionally disturbed.
She
can't do math, you know.
Yeah.
But we all, you know, some kids carry a blankie. Some kids have a favorite teddy bear, stuff like that. That's pretty normal stuff. But when does the red flag go up that my kid's not normal?
Well, I don't know that I'd use the word not normal, but, you know, there may be some concerns if that becomes it interferes with functioning. You know, that's something to look into. Okay, if you're sucking your thumb and you don't make it to class, you don't show up for dinner, or you're not making it to your normal activities, then that's something to be worried
right.
about. We want to check in on that and see what's going on. But, you know, if you suck your thumb because you're having a stressful moment and you're taking a test and it doesn't interfere with functioning, suck your thumb.
Okay. So yeah. Some of this stuff, I mean, again, we do grow out of these things.
Yeah.
Some kids just progress a little bit more. And part of that is we really kind of force kids to be big kids pretty quick. Like, well, you know, some kids just aren't emotionally ready. And
that's,
you know,
the big difference between today's world and when I was a kid.
Because now
the pressure,
they start to go to school at 3.
Yeah, to be an adult is so intense. Even when you're a little kid, you act like an adult, behave, do these things. We have to remember, play for kids and just that frivolity is so important. We can't just toss that out the window for academics. So, you know, going out and playing, being out late because you're playing with your friends, getting dirty, eating mud pies, coming in with messy hair, you know. Those things are important to normal social development. We do those things because that's how we understand each other as human beings. When we put so much pressure on kids whose nervous systems aren't ready to handle that, they're not developed, they're not trained to handle that intense pressure, those intense demands on who they are as a human being, they're just not ready for it.
Your colleague last month talked a lot about screen time and how so many children are spending so much time playing video games. And, you know, some things like ABC Mouse, maybe an hour of screen time, they may actually be learning something and it may be benefiting them. But an hour of Mortal Kombat or what's that?
Minecraft, we've got Fortnite, we've got Rust, we've got everything you could imagine. And it does have an impact. I mean
look, it's violent.
Well, there's so many factors involved. Number one, take like Fortnite, Rust, and the games like that. There's so much toxicity in these games. It's incredible. But the other side of that is, when you spend 4, 5, 6, 8 hours a day gaming, and you're not socially interacting with another human being, you're losing those skills. You're underdeveloping your skills. So if I sit down and talk with you in person, and all you do is game, what skills are you going to have when you sit there and communicate? Are you going to be able to give a back and forth, understand the social cues, the facial cues, prosody, tone of voice? Will you understand those things in a normal relationship dynamic? Or is it kind of stunted? I read some recent research that there's a big impact on that process by gaming and over-gaming. So.
Well, and also, one of the social things that you can talk about is gaming. Because I'm around a lot of little kids, mm-hmm. and they're all about the same age, because I volunteer at one age level, and they all talk about Fortnite, they all talk about some of these other things, and I'm kind of surprised sometimes that they know so much about it, because I would think their parents really wouldn't want them to. There's one called Grand Theft Auto or something that I think
GTA.
You know, yeah. I mean, again, what adults want to do with their pleasure and leisure time is so different. It's so funny. If you said to a parent, well, your 7-year-old's watching pornography, they'd all say, no, we can't have that. But, you know, Grand Theft Auto was just a game. Well, I mean, I'm not maybe making the equation. I'm not trying to make the equation. But you do have to be concerned about what your kids are doing. If they want to play a competitive game, there's plenty of child-appropriate competitive games where you can race on a little pink pony or you can go around a track on a go-kart or something like that. It doesn't have to be, I shot and killed 14 people.
Right, and I'm not going against gaming because I'm a gamer myself, and a lot of times with teenagers, that's how I get to know kids.
Yeah, well, like Dungeons & Dragons causes you to use your imagination, mm-hmm. your mind. Some things are good, but they can have a negative, too much of a good thing, I guess.
Well, that's where the line comes down. I mean, even if you're playing a game that's fairly violent, you know, it has to be put in context, and that's where parents come in. That's where the family comes in. It's putting these games in context. This is not how the real world works. These interactions that you have in games is not how we socially communicate in the world. I mean, you take games where there's in-game chat or they use Discord to discuss things and stuff like that. These things can become very violent, very toxic, racist. I mean, anything you can imagine is in these games, right? But you're going to face that in the real world. I mean, that's just a given. But it has to be put in context of how to handle that. How do you process those things? And when we leave our kids just a game for 10 hours a day or 8 hours a day, that's not put into context. They don't understand the real world versus the fantasy world.
And it's very difficult sometimes for parents and grandparents to have those discussions, because I don't think it's such a problem for young parents because they just came out of that world themselves and they're moving into adulthood now. Probably wish they could game 8 hours a day but have to earn a living.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Grandparents, they're like, what are you talking about with Fortnite and, you know, and Grand Theft Auto? And now they're like, we can't. So they can't even ask grandma and grandpa, is that a good thing? Would it be wrong, actually, to kill a whole bunch of people? I mean, do you think it desensitizes children to violence to where they want to karate chop the other kid, or they want to kick the other kid? Or is that just, honey, before there were guns, people put their finger in the shape of a gun and shot their classmates with fake bullets?
Well, I haven't read any research on that particularly, but I do know there's a big social impact when it comes to the games. It, you know, I go back to when I was kids, you mentioned the gun. Even on recess when we were kids, we played cops and robbers. Mm-hmm. We did all those things. And to my knowledge, I'm not violent. But, you know, is it a part of the process? I don't know. But the social part of it and the loss of interaction with other people, I think, is the important part of that. Is like grandma and grandpa, like these days it's not uncommon for grandma and grandpa to raise kiddos, their grandkids.
Mm-hmm.
There's a divide there in understanding those games and stuff like that. But we all know what a relationship is, or we hope in a relationship is, this quality time together. Kids, we interact with people, other human beings, to learn, how do I socialize with a person? How do I support a person? How do I understand a person when they're sad, they're happy? How do I read the facial cues? That all comes from interaction with another human being, not a video game. So aside from the violence, it's just the loss of that social ability comes into play a lot when there's too much gaming. But grandma and grandpa understand that. And that's something they could easily relate to, well, I shouldn't say easily, but sometimes relate to their kiddos.
Well, that's why, you know, some shake hands, make eye contact. The things we were taught as part of etiquette just aren't being taught anymore. And I've had people be guests on the Mary Griffith Show, sitting right where you're sitting. And you and I are engaged. I mean, I'm looking around. I've got to pay attention to some whistles and bells. But, I mean, I'm basically trying to be engaged with you. I've had people sit there and be on their phone the entire time they're talking to me. They're actually texting someone else and talking to me. And I'm like, wow, that's amazing that you can do that. But it also, number one, it's a little bit insulting to me. And it's a little bit like, I'm not enough to keep your attention. What's
exactly
going on here?
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting. Stephen Spears, my guest today from Cornerstone. And we have them on once a month. Again, we're not recommending them as a mental health provider, but they are a mental health provider. And if you know someone in your family who needs some mental health counseling, call and get an appointment. Children and parents, often the problem has to be solved with both generations being involved. We're going to head up to the IRSA Farmers Cooperative. Rex Battery brings you this report. We are back. Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Stephen Spears, my guest today. He is a counselor at Cornerstone. He deals with children and, of course, with adults, because when children have problems, adults need counseling, too, to help children overcome these problems. And we've talked a little bit about screen time and how damaging it can be for children, depending on what they're watching and how long they're using their device and their screen. But Stephen Spears, an admonition maybe to parents and grandparents and other important adults out there, get off the screen when a kid needs your attention. I remember when my mother was on the phone, back in the old days, the real phone, the kind that rang at your house.
A telephone.
My mother would be like, don't dare talk to me, don't disturb me, I'm on the phone. But my mother wasn't on the phone for 7 hours straight. So we were told to be quiet, and basically we were good up to X number of minutes, and then we started. Then mother would put her hand over the phone and say, if you don't stop it, I'm going to kill you. And then, you know, she'd be, I'm back. Oh, no, it's just a little problem with the kids. You know. Yeah. But when folks are on their device, because now they're not necessarily talking to another person, they're looking at TikTok or Snapchat, or they're, you know, checking out, you know, who's winning the baseball game. It sends a message to your children that you're not that they're not as important as that little thing they're holding on to.
Yeah, and that's how it can be perceived by kids. I mean, I need my mom right now, or my dad, or my caregiver, but you know, they're through the rabbit hole on YouTube or TikTok looking at the latest trend when something's in need. You know, I need you right now. And that goes both ways. When kids are so absorbed in their devices and their parents need them to, like, hey, I need you to come out and do this. And, you know, they're just not responsive to that. They get locked into that. And they, you know, it really is going through the rabbit hole. And you can start off in this process, and then 3-4 hours later you realize, oh, wow, I've been on my little device for that long. And the whole world's just completely gone by.
Well, I had a flip phone for years. My husband dragged me into the 21st century and got me a smartphone. And now I notice that I can hit that news button, and I can, you know, check down all kinds of things. I can know what Meghan Markle's wearing, and I can know what, you know, Vladimir Putin had for lunch, and whether it was poisoned. And I have all this knowledge now at my fingertips, none of which has actually enriched my life, because for years I didn't know what Meghan Markle was wearing every day, and somehow I managed to survive.
Yeah.
But now that I know I can check on it, you know, I just push N, and all these things come up. And how do we get back to real social interaction when we have these devices so much? And even children now sit in front of television sets. Remember the Teletubbies? That was television for children that couldn't even really talk yet, mm-hmm. couldn't even walk yet. They were supposed to watch these purple and pink and orange blobs. But they, where were their parents interacting with the facial, you know, cues?
Yeah, where was the facial cue development, you know, using mirror neurons, all those wonderful things. But it's like now we have to say, okay, is it important to learn technology? Yes, to a certain degree, it's important to learn technology to survive in this world. But how much do we need 4 or 5 hours on an electronic device?
Well, that doesn't really teach you technology. I've heard people say my kid will probably be a computer programmer because he likes to play video games. Well, that's like me saying I'm going to be a radio station engineer because I figured out how to turn my microphone on today.
Right.
No way am I going to go out to the transmitter site and get us back on the air when we go off the air. So my 35 years of experience behind this WT80 microphone ends at this little red on and off button. I mean, there's no way I can put this thing back on the air or get it to run.
You raise a good point because has been a transitional period. Back in the day when the home computer first started coming out, you used the very basics. You used a web browser, email, and that was pretty much extended. And then your Office suite. So as we developed that process, more and more people got comfortable with using Office programs and web browsers.
Making their own TikTok videos and stuff like
and
that.
And now we're at the point that everything's just touch and go. You know, you pull up in your phone, you hit TikTok, and everything just floods by. You have no idea how to manage that app or how to really do anything technical, right? So we've kind of gone beyond the usage of technology as a learning medium. Now it's just we just use. We're all users now. We don't understand, like, to if you take somebody that's only done TikTok and throw them in front of, like, LibreOffice or Microsoft Office and do a spreadsheet, they have no clue.
They have no clue.
But, you know, the thing is that electronics are okay, you know, just like everything else.
Everything's okay.
Everything's okay in moderation. 1 or 2 hours, you know, that's probably all right. But beyond that, I mean, you're really losing a lot. I mean, I always think to myself, when my kids turn 18 and they go off to the world, how much time did I actually spend with them? How much of that was quality time with my kids? And how much of that was just they're off over here and I'm over here? So as you get older, you start reflecting. Oh, I wish I'd have done this.
Or
you
feel regretful. Cats in the cradle.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you. Let's all burst out into that.
I don't think Drew got the reference.
Yeah, he got it.
I totally know that.
Harry Chapin. thought maybe he was too young.
You put everything aside, you're losing time, quality time, that connection, the love with your kiddo or family member because you spend it all on a screen. So when you're much older like me, you start thinking about those things like, wow, you know, I lost this moment here. I don't want to lose any more moments because time's getting shorter.
Time is getting shorter, and speaking of that, we'll take a break.
Okay.
When we come back, Stephen Spears, our conversation will continue. And basically, folks, we've got to start talking to each other. Because the other thing that really is happening on a lot of these sites is we're sending out our manifestos, like the guy that shot up the Buffalo grocery store. We're sending out our manifestos, but we're not having any conversations with anybody back who's saying, hey, maybe think about it this way. Maybe not. That's not the best idea. Nobody's putting the brakes on any one-way conversation. We'll be right back. We are back. Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Just a few minutes remaining with Stephen Spears. It's always interesting when he comes by because, of course, he's dealing with these kind of things in his therapy groups. And it doesn't mean that if your child plays video games, they're going to grow up to be a serial killer or anything like that. But what we're trying to encourage folks to do is take a mental health check of your children. Find out what some of their concerns and issues are and do limit their screen time. Here we're going to have no school here for a while. And, you know, these kids are going to be on their own all day. And in the old days, we used to get in trouble because we'd go down to the creek or we'd cross the certain street we weren't supposed to cross or we smoke a cigarette behind the barn. Now we look longingly at those days. I bet you if, I don't have kids, but if, I remember one time my friend and I were at the store going, what kind of cigarettes does mom like? Oh, she likes this kind. She wants me, you know, we're talking real loud and real stilted, like this clerk didn't
you're not
have any idea.
At all.
Yeah, you're like, you're buying, you know, Marlboros. Yeah, sure, for your mom. But, you know, these, we look back on these things now, and we're like, wow. I would love to have a kid that just snuck a Marlboro behind it. I mean, this would be like one of your problems. children today, they do deal with so much more. I mean, it's their little minds are just crammed full of stuff, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a night and day difference from when I was a kiddo. And when I work with kids, I try to think of that. I mean, just the pressure that they have.
I mean, not being chosen last for, you know, baseball on the baseball diamond was terrifying enough for me. But
oh, me too.
I can't imagine if, you know, like you don't have a gaming device and nobody will speak to you.
Well, right. Do you have a TikTok? No, I don't have a TikTok. Oh, psh, I don't need to talk to you. You have to have a TikTok. How many viewers do you have? Oh, that's not enough viewers. You're not in my social circle. So it even goes that far. You know, how many YouTube followers do you have? Oh, that's not enough. I can't associate with you because you need to have more YouTube followers. But the message is, you know, spend time with your kids. And it's never too late. It's never too late. Put down the screen. Spend some time together. Go outside. Get dirty. Make a mud pie. I'm going to bring that back. Bring back the mud pie.
Even the eating and consumption of the mud pie, you're not against?
Not at all. Helps develop our immune system.
You think that's why we all got COVID, because we quit eating mud pies?
I think so.
Let's see if there's a correlation.
We'll see what happens.
We may find out. There'll be a research study 20 years from now. The mud pie could have saved us.
The mud pie. I mean, you just think about what that signifies, though. That's out getting dirty, playing in the dirt, mm-hmm. being involved with your nature and your friends. We always did as kids, go outside the big mud pie and stack them up, rack them up.
Well, can I tell you this disclaimer from Mary Griffith and WT80 News? If your child gets pinworms, which I had as a child, from doing all that, call Steven Spears, not me.
No, okay. There's always risk to everything you do. Please accept those risks before you endeavor in any activity.
Absolutely. But we're not. We're not, you know, the kids don't go outdoors enough. We're just not doing the things that we used to do. And, of course, parents are out there going, I can't let my kids play outdoors. Have you seen the neighbors? Have you seen the stuff that goes on? Are you aware that, you know, they could be abducted or shot? And that's the other thing. Some kids, we're getting them scared and terrified that, they can barely do anything on their own. You can't be with your mommy all the time, right?
Well, you can't. And that's something that really COVID really kind of made a mess of, you know. And I know a lot of kids who feel isolated because even though in Quincy we were still in school, there was still social distancing, there were masks, they still felt isolated.
They didn't get those facial cues. It was hard. Yeah.
And they felt isolated. And then to go home and do all or be home and have nothing but screens and not that interaction with another human being that says, you know, we're going to get through this. We're together, we, you know, triumph. It's kind of that spirit that I feel we've kind of lost. It's like we can do this together, you know.
Well, we'll gear up for monkeypox. And on that on that note, Drew Quintero, is there anything you would like to add? Are you pro or anti monkeypox first?
Oh, I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't even know.
I would not say that as an answer. I would say you've been anti monkeypox.
I saw an article on it, and I was like, nope, I need a good mental health day, and I just kept I put the phone away, and I was like,
don't read it, it's not real.
I'm done. I'm like, I can't do that right now. In a good space.
You're in a good space. So Cornerstone is constantly seeking grants, seeking funding. You have scholarships for people that cannot afford your services. Do you have any upcoming fundraising events?
We are kind of in a fundraising lull right now, which is kind of nice for me because now I'll be working on all of our grants. We did just have our 17th annual golf benefit on our last Friday, the 20th, and that was a great event. We had 29 teams come out.
Okay.
It was a beautiful day. The rain held off until like 9 o'clock exactly on the bat. I was leaving dinner and walked out, and it just like whoosh, and I was like, I don't care.
Perfect.
It's all done. It's perfect. But, you know, we are always accepting donations, and it's not the size of the gift, but the thought behind the gift that matters. You know, a lot of times people might think, well, I can't make – my $20 isn't going to make a difference, and it does. It's there to help. You want to help others, and that is what we are here to do. We're here to help others learn the skills, support, and give them hope that they need for – fulfilling, effective lives. So just remember, a dollar, $10, $100, $1,000. If somebody wants to give me $10,000, I'd be very happy. But any amount is always gratefully accepted, and we are always so humbled by anyone who can make time out of their day to take money out of their own pocket to put it towards somebody else's mental health and well-being.
Yeah, that's what it's all about, this mental health and well-being. And Steven Spears, you're on the forefront of that. And so we do want to encourage people, don't be afraid that if you have some issues that they cannot be treated, that they cannot be helped. Nobody would walk around with a bone sticking out of a broken leg and say, well, I'd go to the emergency room, but I just don't think they'd help me there. There is help available. And don't be, you know, today is the birthday of Mesmer, the man who hypnotized people and mesmerized people. So don't be afraid that there's going to be some hocus pocus or voodoo. Mental health is truly a condition. I take a little pill every day to help my mood and to help elevate me from depression. And I can tell you that I couldn't do what I do if I didn't have that support and help and see the doctor regularly. So you can go out and do that yourself, too. And I encourage you to do that. Thank you.